Welcome back, everyone. I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 38 of the Art Scene Podcast. Today's guest is artist, curator, and cultural producer Lady Phoenix, who recently followed up a successful show at the Museum of African Diaspora with the newly organized exhibition titled Reengineering Humanity. Before I play our conversation, I wanted to first plug a few things happening here in the Bay Area. The first is a solo exhibition at Part 2 Gallery in Oakland titled Pushing Up Daisies, featuring the work of Lena Gustafson, a former guest of the podcast. The show looks great and it will be up until June 7th. Next, our friends at Bassenreiner Gallery at the Minnesota Street Project are currently exhibiting new works by Laura Figa and Ellie Hunter. Titled Dapia, the exhibition comprises of a series of graphite drawings, sculptures, and unconventional photographic assemblages, addressing the fixing slash amplifying of human capacity and the issues inherent in the strategies deployed for these purposes. Lastly, both SF MoMA and the YBCA have co-organized the first full retrospective of LA-based artist Suzanne Lacy, titled We Are Here. The YBCA's presentation includes a new and experimental approach to authorship and participation, while the SF MoMA offers visitors the ability to explore work from her entire career. The show closes August 4th, so you have time to see both parts of the exhibition. Now, here is my conversation with Lady Phoenix. Nice to have you on, Lady Phoenix.
Thank you.
It's funny, you got referred to me through someone else who was a fan of the podcast, who had listened and said I had to talk to you.
Okay.
And then I had the pleasure of meeting you before we were sitting down to do this podcast, which was great, which we'll talk about, because even that day was even crazy how it played out.
Very special.
Yeah.
Beyond the fact that it was my birthday.
Yes, on top of that. usually the first thing I want to start with our guest is kind of get to know them. And so one of the things I want to ask is, where'd you grow up?
So I was born in the City of Trees, AKA Sacramento, the state capital for the international listeners. So I'm a NorCal girl through and through. Grew up here. My mom worked for the government, so also grew up in Los Angeles sometime. I'd say I spent probably half of my life in the north and half of my life in the south.
Okay.
Even Orange County, AKA the Orange Curtain,
that's great. I never heard of it called that.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
The people, when you live behind the Orange Curtain, you're there. You're probably not moving.
Right.
That's it for you, usually.
So growing up in Sacramento, because now you're like you're a curator. And so grew up in Sacramento.
Curator, cultural producer.
Was that something you saw on the horizon when you were younger?
No, when I was younger, I wanted to be a businesswoman who lived in Japan.
And why Japan?
I don't know. I went to Japanese school as a kid, so I think that's probably why.
In Sacramento?
In Sacramento.
And what was, so this is, explain a little bit more about the Japanese school, and specifically.
Like how I got there?
Yeah.
Like how did the black girl get to Japanese school?
Even more importantly, how is it in Sacramento?
I think Sacramento, because of the bases, because of the war, because of the weather as well, but mainly because of oppression, essentially, Japanese people camps, like things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a huge, cultural contingency that's Japanese. Mm-hmm. And so naturally, to keep the culture, they built Saturday schools for the kids.
Oh, okay.
And a very, very good family friend at the time, who's Japanese, Naoko, I pretty much grew up around her. I mean, my formative years were spent with her and her kids and me watching foreign TV. We had every channel imaginable. So, I watched like ZTV, which was the Indian TV at that time. I watched, whatever the Japanese channel was, the Chinese channel. I was just fascinated. And so I forget exactly how I got to Japanese school. I think I just researched and was like, since I want to do business in Japan, I need to go to Japanese school to learn Japanese,
Yeah.
And my mom was like, okay. And I enrolled in Sakura Gakuen. It's still there.
And what... you know, and did you go through like middle school and high school, or was it just the high school years that you went to school there? Or?
This was my primary school years that I went there. Yeah, for about 3 years at Sakura Gakuen. And then when I got to high school, yeah, enrolled in Japanese school. But that was in Los Angeles, in Long Beach to be exact. I went to Long Beach Poly, so.
Okay.
Yeah, it was in Long Beach. And then in college, yes, but independently. I didn't take classes, but my brother went through high school and college with Japanese. And I ended up in Japan doing business. I had a distribution company there.
All right.
Distributing, like, you know, organic, vegetarian, and vegan goods.
Well, what brought you from Sacramento to Los Angeles?
My mom's job.
Just job, just my parents, like,
yeah.
For
so
work.
When I was in, like, the summer of my seventh grade, we moved to Los Angeles. Yeah, specifically Long Beach.
Did you like Los Angeles a little better at Sacramento?
No, I was depressed. I was totally depressed. Like in Sacramento, we grew up kind of in the countryside, big open fields, lots of trees, animals, you know, just beautiful. And I'm a tourist too, so that really spoke to my nature and speaks to who I am as a person. So moving to Los Angeles, it was the concrete jungle. It was dirty, lots of smog. I developed asthma. We moved from a house to an apartment.
Wow.
You know,
yeah.
Even though it was
big,
like...
It's a big difference.
Yeah. It was a large place, you know, but it wasn't home at the time. And it was a difficult transition for me.
And so you went to high school there. Where did you end up going to college?
I enrolled at UCLA, but I wouldn't say I went there. I went to campus, but I didn't really go to classes. And I mean... I did Orange Coast College, too, before that. So essentially Orange Coast College, Santa Monica College, UCLA.
Yeah. Did you just not like the college?
I just don't like school.
You just don't like school?
Yeah. So that year, that summer that I moved to Los Angeles, I attended eighth grade. And that's pretty much when I mentally and emotionally dropped out of school. I was like, this is not, I'm just not with school. I think there's so many different ways you can learn and not be institutionalized.
Sure.
Yeah.
So then the question is, once you were done with school, basically, what was the next thing you did? Because you mentioned like you had this idea of having, which you ended up doing, of being a business owner in Japan.
Yeah.
What was the path that then eventually allowed you to go do that, to go to Japan?
There was no one thing that happened on the path in that regard. But when I was little, my mom had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And through natural means, she was able to heal herself of cancer. And so I was a kid who grew up, and their parents made kombucha in huge vats, and the house smelled crazy, you know? But it was fun and science fiction-y and also healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that stuck with me my entire life. And I decided that I wanted to be a part of food movements that allowed people to find transformation and, like, ultimate healing and health. And so... I worked at Rainbow Grocery in San Francisco. Love that place. I'm obsessed. The person I'm seeing is equally obsessed with grocery retail. And so I told her, I said, I'm going to take you on a date to Rainbow Grocery, and we're going to go through the, you know, the bulk bin and look at all the exotic seaweeds and the salts and the different noodles. And yeah, I big ups Rainbow Grocery. I love that place. But yeah, so I like co-op models and things like that have always been really fascinating to me, like cooperative economics and even, you know, just more like autonomous lifestyles, specifically around food communities and health. And so I'd say because that's been in the back of my mind pretty much my entire life. My mom had cancer when I was 4, and they were like, oh, you know, you have 3 months to live, so go home and love your family and prepare to die. And she was like, oh, wow, okay, I'm going to get a second opinion, and I also have other ideas about what I need to do with my life and how to organize it, but thank you. And so, you know, she did what she needed to do according to the information she had on board, the things that she was learning in her personal faith, and she's still around. And so, of course, that had a huge impact on my life. And so that's why health. And with Japan, I decided in 2008 that I was going to move there, and I did. And within 3 weeks, I found a job, had a car, had an apartment, and had a sponsored visa to stay in Japan.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, universe, let's work.
Yeah.
And then, you know, recalled my dream to be a businesswoman in Japan and set up a distribution network
to get food there. Tell me a little bit about how this distribution network worked. Like how even, I mean, can't even begin to think of how we even start like a business and like how, what did you, what was, what did it entail to like get it all started?
Yeah. So essentially I had the connections in the food world.
Right.
Right. And I met folks who, so I guess really how it started is I began importing my own food. Japan imports about 85% of their food.
Okay.
And so I began bringing in the things that I loved from the States that I couldn't find in Japan. And at the time I was raw vegan. So
<Yeah. laughs>
I was bringing in all my food essentially.
Sure.
And then care packages from home and from friends. And so I made friends with folks out in the vegan and vegetarian community. One of the friends that I'm, you know, one of the people that I befriended at that time, his family owned 5 grocery stores, like prominent grocery stores in Japan where I was living, like in the Nagoya, like Aichi, Toyohashi, like that region, Gifu, like all of that. And so I bring him a care package saying, hey, I just got this from the States. Do you want to try it? It's this beautiful raw chocolate or these, you know, seaweed crackers or like whatever, nuts and sprouted grains, whatever it was, you know, just stuff that I was bringing in that was so exotic and delicious to them. And then he said, hey, can you bring this in for me? And it was like, sure, what volumes? And then he's like, enough for all 5 stores. Boom, I got a business.
Wow.
That's literally how it started.
Yeah.
And then he told his friends and then so on and so forth.
So how long did you end up running that business for?
Or 5 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And just because, did you stop doing it because you just were done doing that and wanted to do something else? Or
no, I eventually stopped doing it because I got into another business, a beverage business. So you're really trying to get all the Oprah teas. Okay, so
yeah,
man, I'm telling you my life. Okay,
yeah.
Okay, so I was at World Cup in 2010. And
yeah.
With some friends, my
right.
brother, some friends from around Cali, New York, and then Japan. So this is how I got to New York
yeah.
and why I started transitioning out of distribution into into the beverage business. So got to New York in 2010, had kind of like this round the world ticket, and we decided that we don't want to fly back to San Francisco. We want to stop in New York and see our friends. The we is my brother and I.
Mm-hmm.
We'd all parted ways after World Cup and some travel. Ended up going to New York for the summer. He left after a few weeks, and I decided, oh, you know, I want to do New York Harlem. You know, I've only seen Harlem through videos, you know,
yeah.
primarily like MTV, BET,
right.
YouTube, you know.
So this trip to New York was definitely your first time in New York.
Like, no, I've been to New York before, but like
not the,
for
like,
family
the,
stuff.
Yeah, not yeah. like the actual, like into the different parts of the city. And
exactly,
stuff,
and
yeah.
not on my own, not feeling grown and
right.
sexy in the summer and like, oh, this is popping and I've just been at World Cup and I'm just really feeling myself. I'm feeling very cosmopolitan. I'm feeling good, of, you know, just feeling great about life. And so being in New York, like amplified that,
yeah.
you know, and I was walking around like, take that. I'm in Harlem and I'm like, okay, I've always wanted to drive a cab. I've seen the TV shows and the movies. It looks fabulous. I won't be a grumpy cab driver. I'll meet all these wonderful people. And I romanticized being in New York. Everything was like,
sure.
oh, I'm living the dream, baby. I'm living the dream. And yeah, I was not introverted that summer. I was out here, you know, just really out here. And got a job in Harlem at a restaurant, which was super popping at that time, like a French, Moroccan, kind of American fusion cuisine thing.
Sure.
Celebrities coming through, beautiful people, models, just, you know, black excellence everywhere. It just felt amazing. They later shut down, and I thought, okay, what am I going to do? Found this woman who was like, maybe still is New York's top, like organic, blow-dry colorist, whatever, haircut. She was just the it,
right?
In the East, Lower East Side. Worked for her, making cash. She made racks. People loved her. you know, from like editor in chief of like top magazines to like top tech dude and finance dude's wife. Like people really loved her. So I was making great money, you know, still doing my distribution business. And it was fantastic.
Yeah. So I was asking, like, so you're still doing this
remotely?
I'm still
doing distribution remotely because all I have to do is set up like the shipment of stuff.
Right.
You know, just facilitate shipment and then boom.
And did you like already like move out of like Japan or did you still have like a home and you're still just
visiting? No, no, no. I was in New York with a backpack.
Wow.
With the backpack. Japan is my home at this time.
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
So I'm on holiday.
Yeah.
Japan is great and hot in the summer. People travel. I can do the great thing about distribution is I can do it from anywhere.
Because
I don't have like fleets or trucks or, you know, a holding facility. I'm essentially a fulfillment center. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is wonderful. Yeah. You know, I can do this. This is great. And still just make money. You know, and the Japanese are upfront with the payments. They don't.
Yeah.
You're never not going to get your money from a Japanese person in Japan that you do. At least that was my situation.
Sure.
You know? So I have to say that while in Japan, to maintain the visa, I was an English teacher.
Oh.
So it even made it more fantastic because people always ask me, well, what do you do?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, what do you do? Like, are you just an English teacher? Do you have any other interests? And I tell them, yes. You know, by day I'm an English teacher and by night I run a distribution business. You know, where I'm doing all of, like, fulfilling all my orders from Europe or, you know, the States. And then, depending on the shipment terms, having stuff delivered here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
it was
cool.
Great.
And they're cool because it allows you to still, like, make money.
Absolutely.
And then still be able to travel and, like, be in other places that you wanted to be in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so as long as I was doing Skype calls with them and just really checking in, everything was fine. You know, I didn't need to be on the ground for anything. And once I realized that, I'm like, oh, bye. And at the time I was setting up a business. So basically at the time I was setting up a procedure, I was going through a procedure that would allow me to incorporate in Japan and then use my business's company to support my visa.
Yeah.
And the visas of five other people.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
I was like,
that's really cool.
Yeah, it was great. And so I'm like, okay, when I return to Japan, I'll do this. And I was only going to stay a few weeks in New York. And then I'm like, no, I have an opportunity to like be here this summer and just have like this New York summer, the one that was my fantasy.
Sure.
Living my dream. And so had that and decided, oh, I'm going to stay for the winter. And the winter is when I got the job with the person in the salon. The restaurant job was cute for the summer. Family friends that lived in New York whom I was staying with were like, you definitely don't want to drive a cab. And you're from California. You think that's cute. It's not cute. It's a grimy job. You do not want to drive a cab.
Yeah. So let me ask you, because you've mentioned that you're kind of an introvert, but you said definitely not that summer.
Oh, I wasn't that summer. No.
Before that,
I prefer my own company. Yeah.
So, like, even in Japan, even growing up, you're kind of just like...
And I had the one brother.
Yeah.
That was great. I mean, surprisingly, like, I would come in being social at a level of radiant extrovert, you know, shiny, attractive personality, like that being that person. I think it's only necessary to be that person for business and for wanting to spread good vibes to people. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessary it's not necessary to be that person to like get attention or to, you know, as a mode of being.
Sure.
As a mode of being, I prefer to be alone or with friends in nature.
Right.
Or around a dinner table, you know, like libations, conversation, music. Other than that, if it's not those very specific scenarios, I want to be by myself. I want to be with myself, to myself. I am my own muse. So when I get to share time with me, it's rejuvenating. And it brings me joy.
So now it's wintertime in New York.
So now it's wintertime in New York.
Yeah.
I've left the restaurant job / it closed. And I'm like, okay, I could keep doing distribution, but I feel like... So I've learned from being social, especially through the restaurant job, that this is what New York is about. It's about being out there, networking, meeting people, you know, obviously bringing value, but the network and the people you meet and whom are attracted to you, whether it be for ideas.
Sure.
There was a TED Talk a few years ago, and it talked about ideas having sex, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's New York, you know? if you could get out there and procreate with as many people, you know, as possible in terms of like your ideas and, you know, what's bubbling in your world, what's bubbling in theirs, man, the stuff that can be created in such a short amount of time. You know, I found that instantaneous, or what felt instantaneous, that it kind of like instantaneous, like connections and then something being born of that connection. That was like, whoa, this is like ultra manifestation, at least with the people I was meeting, and right. certainly with the energy that was available at the time, right? And then, so, for example, at the time that I met the woman who had the salon, I thought, well, I want to be a stylist. You know, like, I'm just choosing the things I've always wanted to do, that sure. New York, you know, short of, like, working on Wall Street, right?
Yeah.
Even, like, I was like, I want to be a music manager. And so I found someone who's a badass lawyer and a music manager. And he was like, okay, you know, I'll mentor you.
And do you think that was just, like, feeding off the vibe of New York? Or were these, like, things because you as a person, you just wanted to try out all these different things?
I wanted to live, yeah. I felt like, okay, I'm here for this summer. I'm not going to drive the cab, but I have the freedom right now to try all of these things in the city that's most electric.
Yeah.
Just to try, see. It's like a tapas, you know, the tapas of life.
Yeah.
And I had my distribution company, so I knew I had this other thing that was my safety net.
Right. You had some stability that allowed you to do this.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And literally, like, the space, too, within my mind and my being.
Right.
Like, the space and the...
Right. There's no need to stress about, like, bills being paid or anything like that.
And I'm living with family friends. And they're like, cool, stay here as long as you want.
Yeah.
And then so once I figured out by wintertime, once I manifested the job with the person in the salon, I'm like, okay, this is not a stylist job, but it's a salon job. It puts me in proximity to this thing.
Yeah.
And then once the person also said, okay, I'll mentor you for music, I thought, I have the salon, which is cash, which is wonderful for me. but so found new stability in that. And then I met someone, a referral. So the music thing was cool. I was just shadowing, going to a bunch of concerts, meeting people, doing industry stuff. And I thought, okay, this is cool. I'm getting my feet wet, but I'm not sold. So that was kind of just me networking in that space. But the hair thing was great. Was meeting all kinds of people, but decided, okay, this is not going to get me to being a stylist, and I'm not with it. So I manifested, you know what, universe, I need to actually probably do something related to distribution because... If I started entertaining living there, I'm like, oh, this is winter wonderland. And even though it was during Snowmageddon, I thought this was great.
Right.
You know, this is fantastic. It was, but for me, I go to Tahoe in the winter to snowboard. Right. I don't live there.
Right.
So to live in the snow globe, I was like, oh my God, I'm just doing it. I just loved my life at that time.
Well, and it was so different than what you knew. And it's
complete opposite.
Like, to experience that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And since I was in my extroverted time, again, having come from like South Africa, just really charged, charged, you know.
I got to say, like, as you're telling me this story, this part of your life, you seemed way more charged.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I'm moving closer to you. But instead, I'm going to be like,
I can feel the vibe of like what you were feeling during that time period.
I was amped. It was such a blessed time for me, you know. I felt like Midas. You know, everything I touched turned to gold. The things that I wanted in terms of manifestation was happening. I felt amazing. And so someone referred a gentleman to me who had a beverage company, but the beverage company wasn't really... moving. It wasn't doing anything. You know, they had some traction, but it wasn't the traction to match the commitment that he'd already made for like 2 years. And, you know, they were in like bodegas and stuff. And so they're like, okay, this person needs help with distribution. Why don't you meet him and see if there's any synergy? So I did. We made great strides in just 3 months. And he was like, okay, I want to bring you on. And so I said, okay, that's cool. He's an interesting character. So I'm like, the only way I'm coming on is if you make me an owner. And he's like, yeah, sure, sure. And I want a C-suite role. Sure, sure, sure. So I became COO of that company. Within like 6 to 8 months of like the chemistry that we built, we were in pretty much every single Whole Foods in America.
Nice.
Yeah, it was, a very stressful time. Very, very stressful time, but a magical time. Yeah, we did some things. And so That was also around the time that my grandmother started to get very sick. So now we're at like 2013. Mm-hmm. So started with him in 2011, 2013, transitioning out of that company, moving back to Sacramento. My grandmother has Alzheimer's.
And were you still maintaining the business, these businesses, the distribution businesses?
The distribution faded in 2011.
The one from Japan, the original one.
Yeah.
And then, but you're still maintaining the beverage one.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'm an owner.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And I'm the COO, of course.
Yeah.
I'm
Is that still the case?
No, I got out in 2013.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's not the case. And the company also sold.
Right.
So it was very startup.
Right.
That
right.
grew rapidly.
Right.
Great. It was great at the time. It's what I asked for, but it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, this was a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you're turning on the faucet and now I'm under a fire hose.
Yeah.
Is how it felt on some days.
Mm-hmm.
And great lesson. I know how I would do things different moving forward, but it was a lot at that time. So spending the winters in Sacramento and being like a caregiver was a good balance for me.
Sure.
But then it became like, oh, your grandmother's gonna die, so, you know, why don't you come and say your goodbyes kind of vibe? And then that's when I was like, okay, that was 2014. I'm like, I'm leaving New York for good.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Didn't leave for good. Was still sort of like going back to New York for work. So not really bouncing back and forth, but I'd be there like at 2 months at a time.
Sure.
Maybe two or three times a year.
Yeah. In that bi-coastal life.
Yeah, trying to.
Yeah.
At least trying to maintain, because my heart and my stuff was still in New York.
yeah, for sure.
And then in 2015, I was like, okay, this isn't actually practical. And my grandmother needs me full-time.
Yeah.
Yeah, full-time. So yeah, that was really hard for me too, just to leave that. Because for me, you know, 2010 was totally magical.
Mm-hmm.
And I used that as my foundation for how I live my life overall in New York. You know, just I felt like New York was one of those places where anything can happen.
Sure.
Well,
tell me, when you moved to back to Sacramento, obviously you had to, you wanted to, because you wanted to be with your grandmother.
Yeah.
And
I also wanted to support my mom.
Right.
Who changed her life to be not only my grandmother's caregiver, but also my grandfather, who died of prostate cancer a few years before that. So
when you made that move, were you still kind of bummed, like, that you were like moving away from New York?
Totally.
Yeah, like,
I was devastated. I mean, that may be drama, but I was definitely a little I wasn't devastated. That's a little drama. But
right.
I was I definitely say that I was slightly depressed.
Because it feels, even like as you're talking about it, it sounds like it felt like, man, it was the end of a run. Like
it was the
end of an era,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
I mean, you're doing cool stuff today, but like it felt like the way you talk about this experience and what you've learned and all the cool things that you did.
And the friends I made. I mean,
yeah.
When I went, so I just got back from New York yesterday morning and was out there for Art Month and then this other, you know, business stuff. And I stayed with friends that I met at the beverage company.
Yeah.
You know, who are family to me. Family, you know? Shout out Issa and Brian. Yeah.
So when you ended up moving back to Sacramento, how long did that last, being helping out your mom and your grandmother?
Yeah, so, well, it was off and on. It was off and on since 2012.
Yeah.
So I would just spend winters with them primarily.
Yeah.
I would say, so when I was living there, I would say from 2014 to 2017?
Yeah.
18? Yeah. I moved out in 2017 to the Bay, where I lived before.
Right.
So I moved back to the Bay from SAC and decided, okay, the best thing I can do to help my grandmother is create something that will help her. So in 2015, while living there, I entered this VR hackathon at the Keck School of Medicine.
Sure.
And decided, okay, VR is going to help my grandmother, because at the time she wasn't sleeping. She was pretty much up all the time. She'd maybe take naps, you know,
right.
Literal cat naps. She'd be down for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and then wake up and say, ta-da! You know, like whatever is going on with her.
Sure.
So essentially, yeah, in 2015, again, I was depressed.
Sure.
Right. And at this point now, there's no drama. It's actually sort of like severe. You know,
right.
I'm just like, oh my God, there's nothing I can even do. It's just like, this is my life right now. And, you know, as somebody with the energy and zeal and kind of razzle dazzle, if you will, that I was explaining with what I was explaining earlier about New York and my experience there, it all of that came to a complete stop.
Yeah.
Like hard breaks, you know? And I had to transition now into being this person who's giving now 24-hour care to someone really in need. Yeah. Plus being at home, working mm-hmm. through the issues of three generations of women being together.
Sure.
And although obviously she's my grandma, there's some subcultural differences.
Right.
And so just cultural differences.
Right.
And so...
Well, and they also had... They didn't have that like cool summer in New York. Like
they didn't live in Japan.
You're more exposed, I think, to things. You know, what is it like? Each generation gets more exposure to more and more things. Hopefully, ideally, right? And so like you just had a more different mindset of what you want for yourself compared to what they wanted. Each of them wanted for themselves, I guess.
Themselves, or even me, right? So there's all of that. And then plus the healing that needs to happen now through the reality of, or with the reality of, there's one in the ancestral line who's now transitioning.
Sure.
And so for me, it's always, you know, I've always thought that the most devastating day that I have is when my mother transitions. And naturally, you know, supporting my mother as her mother transitions was, you know, it was deep. It was really deep. I'm a brand new person as a result, and I'm so thankful that I had the opportunity to be of service, one, right? And then two, receive even energetically and psychically, spiritually, the wisdom and the energy of someone who is at the threshold or in the threshold, you know. I was aware that I had choices.
Sure.
And I was aware that one of those choices, pretty much all the time, was love. How to lead with love and compassion, how to choose love in the most difficult moments. Moments where I was like totally depressed, moments where I was totally angry and just frustrated. Yeah, and just sometimes angry with myself, because I knew I was holding on to things that I should let go of, and I couldn't. Mm-hmm. And so how I found art through that is my mom is an artist. And she's the person who would come home from her 9-to-5 and then, you know, make her art.
Yeah.
And she's the person who, like, would make our dresser and our bed and our clothing and, you know, incredible food. And she's just a maker and a doer and an artist. And I grew up with that vibe. My grandmother's a little bit more traditional, and like a woman's place is in the house, and the husband is the head of the house. And
sure,
I didn't grow up with that. My mom taught me differently.
Right.
Yeah. So she decided, I know what you need. Why don't we go take an art class? Right. So she relied when I, because I wasn't doing very well. I was angry.
Right.
I was sad. I felt like I didn't have any control over what was going on, and I didn't. And I didn't know how to be with letting go.
Sure.
You know?
So your mother recognized this. She saw it.
She saw it, and she said, let's go take an art class. You need to tap into your creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So we did, and it was a digital mixed media collage. The instructor at that time, she's Jai Young. Shout out to Jai. I'm saying shout out like I'm a rapper, but whatever. Gratitude and appreciation to Jai, who was not only, you know, my professor at the time, but also like a real friend and understood me and really saw me. And that's something I didn't get. I rarely got, you know, when I was 8th grade through college.
Sure.
You know, essentially the reason why I was like, I'm cool in school. I actually don't need this. I can learn in other ways.
Sure.
And so we took the class, my mom and I took the class, and I was learning Photoshop, and I was also painting and learning about gesso and, you know, buying canvas and learning how to stretch canvas and make frames and just like all kinds of stuff. And I would tell my mom, I said, Mom, I'm the love child of Robert Rauschenberg and Jackson Pollock. And I told Jai, I said, one day I'm going to be a famous artist, and you can come to my shows and know that you were part of the origin story. And she, and you know, I was just being dramatic,
right.
You know? That wasn't actually my plan.
Yeah. Did it help?
It helped. Being, you know, the faking it till you make it.
Sure.
So going 0 to 100 on like, oh, I'm just taking this class as sort of like an art therapy.
Right.
To like, screw it. I'm just going to go all the way. Because the people in the class were like real artists. You know,
yeah.
This is what they were doing with their lives.
Sure.
So then I'm like, me too.
Yeah.
You know, why not? I'm joining in.
Right.
I'm going to be a famous artist.
Yeah.
You know, not, and if I'm not famous, it doesn't matter. I'm going to make the best artwork of my time.
Sure.
You know, just and really joining them in
sure.
that.
Yeah, well, and I would assume you went into like a collegial atmosphere where like you're seeing what they're making, they're seeing what you're making,
right.
You both are commenting on each other's stuff, giving like you
sure.
know input.
Crits are real.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and so like you're becoming like you know it's kind of like a mini community sometimes. I always
exactly.
tell about art classes, you
yeah.
know, because you really it's funny you critique each other, but you have to learn to take it. And then, but then at the same time, you're like also helping each other because sometimes people are like, well, maybe if you did it this way, like, oh, what about if you
sure.
did it that way? And
absolutely.
Like this like communication between it. It becomes like a family and a community with those
yeah.
classes.
I mean, some people cried.
Yeah.
You know, people cried. People were sharing deep stuff. People were, you know, and it was something that's really simple, like suggestion. Oh, well, I thought you should have done it this way, or I thought this was, you know, not really well executed. And then you
sure.
find the whole narrative behind you know, why they made the piece and what just like their life. And that
sure.
was really special to me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I started sharing the art on Instagram.
Yeah. So let me ask you something. Why did you decide that was the medium you wanted to show it on? And because I would assume like you being in a class, somebody must have put or the idea of like, well, oh, let's show our art like on an exhibit or a small gallery and on campus or something like that. So I'm curious.
We went to museums, but there wasn't a whole lot of talk about people. I mean,
like, did they not have the option or provide the opportunity as a class to show your work?
Yeah, absolutely, they did.
Yeah.
But for me, that's when the fake it till you make it stopped.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I'm not a real artist. I'm just, I'm in class with all of these real artists, and I feel privileged and lucky to be around these creative people because
sure.
it helped move me out of a funk.
Yeah.
That funk of, like, I don't have any control. My grandmother is dying. I'm
sure.
not in New York. You know, I'm not involved in business. You know,
right.
I'm just here
right.
doing, you know, at the time I'm like, I'm here doing nothing, even
right.
though in retrospect, that was the most important thing I've ever done.
Yeah. Well, and I would assume at this point in your life, you're like probably thinking like, I just spent like the last few years kicking ass at all these different things.
Right.
And being like the top of my game on each of them and doing and feeling like I was producing something and making something.
Yeah.
And then you go to a complete stop.
Yeah, hard breaks.
And now you're going slowly, but you're now slowly creeping into this idea you're making stuff.
Right. So that's why my mom's like, okay, you know, I'm the person, again, if I see it in my mind,
yeah.
I say, okay, let me figure out the steps to achieve this.
Yeah.
And I'm also, for those that might be wondering, I'm a Taurus, April 29th. If you see me, you can tell me happy birthday all year long. I'm an Aquarius rising,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a Gemini moon. So that Gemini has me believing I can do anything, you know, just, and that's pretty much also kind of been the case.
Mm-hmm.
I see it and then I figure out
right.
how to get it done,
yeah.
whether it's like identifying the person or the resource that allows me to take the steps necessary to achieve,
sure.
you know, the thing.
So your mindset was that you understood you liked making art, you could make art, but you felt like,
I'm not a real artist.
You're not a real artist because, but then it's interesting because then your take was like, but before I want to be a real artist, but before I get there, I want to go back and learn how do I do it. But then when I go into it, I do it successfully. Is what it sounds like to me.
No, I don't. No, it was a little, a little less strategic. So essentially, we had to keep a journal of
okay.
our process and the artwork we were making.
Sure.
We had to essentially track it. And I thought, well, I'm not going to write stuff down.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not. I have this weird block when it comes to actually, I have like 18 million journals, aka my volumes of thought.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, in many boxes. And so I thought, I don't want to do this anymore. If people find these half journals, good for them. These are the scrolls of Phoenix. But I need to have everything in one place. So
sure.
That's why I chose Instagram.
Sure.
Like, it's a visual diary. I can make these very long, poetic captions, you
sure.
know, if that's what's necessary. And so I started a private Instagram for the class to track my progress. And then I thought, some of these things are really fresh, you know? The class responded well. My crits were very positive. I'm going to share this on my primary Instagram and see what the reaction is. And so I did.
And what kind of work were you making at this point? Like, what was the best way to describe it?
Digital collage, mixed media collage.
So it had to be seen like digitally. Like, it had to be seen on the screen or something.
Some of it, but not all of it. Some of them were physical works too.
Like printed or sculpture or like installation work.
All the above. I was trying everything. I was literally trying everything.
Yeah, yeah. Was there like a specific theme to it, did you feel like?
Some people might say Afrofuturism.
Okay.
Or like technology or, yeah. And these are just things I'm attracted to.
Right? Sure.
So,
right.
I love Octavia Butler. Mm-hmm. I wish that I had been around in the time that she had been around. I'm like, maybe we could have either been lovers or best girlfriends. I just love her mind, you know? also ruled by Venus. I'm a romantic. I can't help it. I started keeping track. I got, you know, really positive feedback even on Instagram, and so began posting more of my stuff. Then people would slide in DMs like, would you post my stuff? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, sure, you know, I can share your work, because I was sharing other work as well,
sure.
Not just mine. I was sharing work that I was curating, essentially, work that I found really interesting. Because now I had a language or a framework for understanding art, mm-hmm. For the art that I liked, the artists that I liked, just a whole world opened to me. You know, I felt like an area of my brain that was underutilized all of a sudden became my storeroom, mm-hmm. my laboratory, and I loved it. So then began sharing other people's work, and folks would ask me, well, how do you think I can make this better? And I'd be like, you don't need my opinion. I'm a nobody. But would give them feedback, and then they would go viral with those corrections with that piece. They go viral. And then so I thought, wow, it's so much more fun to curate other people's work.
Well, and also, did you find that the people that were coming to you, was their work more in line of the kind of stuff that you were making? Like, were you getting people that were like a traditional painter?
No, more digital.
It was more digital.
Yeah.
So it was like those types of artists were attracted to what you were doing.
That's right. You know, unbeknownst to me at that time, I was building a community of digital artists.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, like, I wonder if like all of a sudden gallerists. You're like starting to see this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even folks from the traditional world as well, because they're entertained, I think, by what is possible in the digital space.
Sure, yeah.
Plus, it's just cool.
Yeah.
Futuristic, all of these things. And so, fast forwarding into the future, I began working for brands and high net worth individuals on their Instagram and curating for them and like being people's ghost curator, and that was interesting.
Yeah.
And like actually kind of popping at it, you know?
Sure.
And I was like, this is great. And someone, I don't even know if I should say the name of the artist, but the story goes, if you listen to this podcast and you see me in the street, ask me about this story. But an artist who's prominent in the art world, he's like very known, said, DM me and said, hey, and this was in 2016,
sure.
This is in early 2017.
Right.
And said, hey, I'm at this conference, and it's an art conference, a large art conference, our gathering, and said, and the Yes Universe just came up on one of the slides. And I'm like, what? That's crazy.
And so and this is the name of the...
This is the name of the, my...
Of your space on Instagram.
Of my space on Instagram,
right.
Yes Universe.
Yeah.
I'm at Yes Lady Phoenix, if you want to check it out, or at yesuniverse.art. And said, yeah, a slide just came up with the Yes Universe on it, and they're talking about it like it's an institution.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? They're talking about the Yes Universe?
That was literally going to be my next question. Like, I was like, did you decide if this was your brand or like a website? But no, this is just like your Instagram
handle.
Yeah,
it's my Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I monetize it because I'm an entrepreneur.
Sure, sure,
you know,
right.
Just, you know.
As we've learned earlier.
Yeah, I'm not, like, also, I think you know, beyond the obviously sort of like family dynamic.
Sure.
I was also depressed because I wasn't like making money like that. I wasn't.
Right.
I felt useless.
Right. At the end of the day, your life, your childhood goal was to be a businesswoman
in Japan.
In Japan,
I did that.
And so, like, you have to at least find some way to still incorporate that It's what you like, right?
So here's the thing that I forgot to mention is the way I ended up staying in New York is that they had, so I was there that summer, experienced the winter, and then I decided, I'm going to, okay, playtime is over. I've had enough. This has been an excellent holiday, summer, winter. Oh, just so full, right?
Yeah.
Decided, okay, I'll go back to Japan when they're popping. And that's that's March, Sakura season. And so I thought, okay, I'll buy my ticket for, end of February, beginning of March. Did that. They had 311, right, which was a tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
All planes were grounded. Japan was pretty much like shut down.
Shut down.
There's no flights until further notice. So I was essentially abandoned in New York with only my backpack.
Yeah.
Luckily, I had my family friends that I could stay with. Luckily, I had my little, jobs. And, and I was still doing the distribution cup. So it wasn't like I was in desperate straits.
Sure.
But essentially, I couldn't go back home, right? I was there with just a backpack.
It was your home. It was your home base, you're right.
Yeah, it was my actual home. I'd moved, things from San Francisco there, shut my life down in California, was like, okay, I'm here in Asia now. This is what I'm doing. And, people were like, you're crazy. Just go back to, the Bay. You're in the States now. You don't have to stay in New York. I'm like, no, I'm staying in New York. I'm just going to do this. I'm going to do that challenge. I was just living, having the ability through youth and the distribution company, it just gave me so much space and range to just try things on, which I had never had before. And I took the liberty. I took the liberty of trying things on, and it worked. It really worked. And so I learned best by doing.
Yeah.
That I'm very tactile. I'm experience-based. I need that. Sitting down and watching a presentation.
Yeah.
That doesn't work for me.
Right.
I'm very hands-on.
Right.
And so the world is my workshop.
Yeah.
And so...
So being an artist was probably one of the best things then, because, what's more hands-on than you making your own work?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when the artist told me that, especially because he's respected and he's known, I'm just like, girl, you got a lane. You got a lane. And then I told you 2015, I entered this VR hackathon, invite only, Keck School of Medicine. It was the first year they had done this.
Yeah.
I was a finalist. And I thought, whoa. And I was just spaghetti coding, just rando.
Right.
Just
You're learning, not like someone who went to MIT and did all this crazy stuff, right?
No, or even a coding boot camp at the time. I hadn't done any of that. It was like, you know what? I studied a little bit of, lay neuroscience enough to figure out that MVR, the person who's in the experience, their brain doesn't know the difference between the virtual world and the physical world. Mm-hmm. Neurologically, it's all the same thing. And I thought, okay, this is how I'm going to help my grandmother. I'm going to build this epic, meditation app for her. And it worked. I did an experiment on her for 8 weeks, and it worked. She got to sleep. She was feeling calmer. She was happier. Like, all of this, she was a changed woman. As a result, I got sleep. And I think part of being, angry, depressed, upset, feeling like, was because I also wasn't sleeping.
Sure.
I wasn't sleeping. I get an hour of sleep. And it just, my whole everything, a ton of bricks. And so that's when my mom was like, okay, let's go and do the art classes and change up your reality a bit.
Sure.
And it was wonderful. And so...
So once that clicked for you, that this was a lane for you.
So it was clicking in terms of technology, specifically VR.
Mm-hmm.
I also took classes at Berkeley, went through a program for biomedical engineering. I took this idea of trying to help my grandmother very seriously.
Sure.
Mixed with the art, I found that the art and technology was what I love most.
Right.
And then being able to monetize Instagram for a few years, I thought, this is also another lane, doing this stuff on the internet. And I'm like, this is familiar because I had the distribution company and was running that through the internet.
Yeah.
And once I figured out that this is essentially the same thing and that my story doesn't need to look like someone else's story to validate me being where I am or validate my interests or validate me as a professional, then I thought, well, get out the way. You hear me knocking? Let me in.
Yeah.
Okay, you're not going to let me in? Boom, I'm going to build my own door. I'm going to build my own way. I'm going to build my own lane. And so I'd say slowly but surely, since 2017 officially, I've been doing that. And so had my first show at the MOAD, appreciation and gratitude to everybody at the MOAD.
Well, then if you have all these things, everything is everything seems to be flowing now, right? It seems like. And now you're realizing you're also building up a community of digital artists. through this thing.
Yeah, digital artists, media folks, right.
And so
gallerists, curators.
So like, all these people, are they reaching out to you? I mean, tell me, are they reaching out to you for help? Are they reaching out to you like, oh, thank God, like you're creating the space for all of the above.
Help. Like, hey, can you promote this for us? Sure. What are your rates? To do you want to collab? To do you want to do a studio visit? To hey, can you give me feedback on this? To I have a show. Do you want to be our guest? To you know.
And what were you doing with the? So now you have this platform. Are you even like thinking to yourself, I could become like a curator,
yeah,
and curate shows, but like, and not just on the Instagram account, but like
in real life.
And real life.
So that was Moad. So I approached Moad about doing a show in 2015.
And that's the first.
That was my first attempt.
Your first attempt.
Yeah. So I met Mark Saab, aka Mark Digital, who runs this really incredible online space called Feltzine. Mm-hmm. And Mark was the first person I made IRL contact with. Regarding the digital art space.
Yeah.
I loved what they were doing at Feltzine.
So wait, you weren't even meeting other people in real life at this point? Still? Mm-hmm. Like, they were just, it's all through DMs?
All through DMs.
Okay.
So I, you know, and I still have the people in the community to this day, even celebrities that'll slide in and be like, hey,
yeah,
what do you think of this? Or can you help me purchase this? Or, you know, recently someone was like, I just saw your Instagram. And saw that you were in pictures with this person, and then I went on their Instagram. It's an artist.
Sure.
Went on their Instagram and saw that you again and they're on their Instagram in photos. And so I was just hoping that you could, you know, help me get in contact with this person. Mm-hmm. I've been wanting them to work with me for a really long time, and I keep hitting them up on their Instagram, but they won't answer me. Can you connect us?
Yeah. So you're even facilitating like connections, like with people.
And so I wrote back to this celebrity, this guy, that I'm like, dude, how do you even know who I am? Like, what? This is totally blowing my mind right now. Sorry, I want to help you, but first, how did you find me? You know? And he's like, oh, I went to the artist and I saw that you were in a picture with this person, and so. Because I've been DMing them and they won't answer, I decided that maybe since you're less famous, you'll answer. And I thought,
sure.
Well, I'm not even famous. And yes, I'm happy to help you. This is effing awesome.
Like, yeah.
This is awesome.
And so now, did you reach out to Mark, who also works at Moad?
Right.
Did you reach out to Mark because you knew he worked at Moad?
No, I had no idea.
It was just because you through the world, the digital art world, that you knew about him and wanted to meet him.
So yes and no. There was an artist that I really liked, and I wanted to know more about this artist who was based in Paris at the time. He's a French artist. He lives in Paris. And,
sure.
Read as many articles as I could about this guy, and one of the articles said that his first sort of introduction to internet fame or notoriety was through Feltzine. Excuse me. So then I had to know more about Feltzine.
Yeah.
Then I found them on Instagram, began following them, and again, still wanted to know more. So I looked up Feltzine, you know, just did a general search, found Mark, found that Mark also worked at the Moad, and thought, okay, let me just make contact with him because he's a black dude who's fresh and doing this really weird but amazing Feltzine. And so was like, I want to work with you. Let's do something. Yes, Lady Phoenix. That was the name of my Instagram at the time. Mm-hmm. Yes, Lady Phoenix and Feltzine. So I looked up his information, found his phone number, I think, on LinkedIn, and then sent him a DM, but also followed up with a call. He eventually answered, I think, like a few days later, and I've just been in touch with him ever since. And then so he described Feltzine as doing, you know, moving in a different direction, exploring all these other things, and not really taking on the kind of collaborations that I spoke of. And then I'm like, okay, well, you work at the Moad, so can we do something like digital there? And he's like, yeah. So went down to the Moad, met him for the first time, was a really gracious host. Again, felt that spark that I felt in New York.
Yeah. You're making connections again. You're like going around and like, you're pitching something you
exactly.
want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I start feeling that creative, really, the thing, the je ne sais quoi, if you will, that you could feel with your fingers when you just rub your fingers together. It's like you could feel the oxygen molecules, you know? And they feel like shiny pearls.
Sure.
You know, they feel like diamonds. You know, they, Yeah, so but feeling great. By the way, Mark was also a gracious host.
I have to make the comment, though, because you have said multiple times about how you're an introvert, but you seem to really thrive when you're an extrovert.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So if I'm going to be an extrovert, if I'm going to come out of my shell, you're going to see, I'm going to be the sun.
But you also seem to enjoy it.
Of course. I'm at a point where I enjoy life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You smell that? I mean, like, ooh, fill up your lungs with that. Because I knew, like, in that time that I was taking care of my grandmother, not the entire time, right? But there were times when it was really dark. I felt so sad and so hopeless and like, shit, man, is this life? You know, is this, like, is there no way to avoid all these diseases? Not knowing, like, is this person getting better? Are they getting worse? And then just, again, the grief of losing a loved one.
Well, you mentioned earlier, like, you don't have the empty space, headspace to enjoy all the things you wanted. Because it's consumed by all these other things you have to worry about.
That's right. That's right. And I think that worry is the operative word.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I've been a worrier since, a warrior and a worrier. Since birth. And so now, with the experience of my grandmother, what she blessed me with and what I developed is being more of a warrior and being able to transition out of being a worrier.
Yeah.
Someone feeling like worrying is somehow going to help the situation, which it never did.
Right.
Right. And so through my experience with her, I was able to give that up for something that was much more empowering.
Sure.
And, you know, art helped me to see the world through new eyes. It was my companion as I was transitioning from being a worrier to being a warrior. It's a part of how I experience joy in the world. It's a part of how I commune with folks. Mm-hmm. You know, I've built community around it. So art for me and being in the art world is, not about academia, not about getting a job at an institution. It really is about bringing people together, and that's what I love about curation, and I feel that's what I was able to do and I'm still doing through Yes Universe. Mm-hmm. And so Yes Universe, again, I went to Mark, so bringing it, kind of like tying it back to 2015, meeting Mark for the first time and then pitching something called 40 terabytes in a URL, to the play on 40 acres and a mule. And I wanted to do, you know, I'm like, okay, we'll do this Black History show and talk about Blacks and technology and yada, yada. They were like, okay, that's a cute idea, but no, not this year. 2016, hey guys. So what do you think about collaborating? I have this idea I want to do. Okay, that's really cute, but not this year. October 2017, and all of my power came to them and said, guys, I have this idea I want to do. I want to curate a show there. They were like, okay, great. And I got the big yes. And so from the artist telling me that at conferences with, you know, I consider this gentleman to be an elite artist. So with, you know, kind of the creme de la creme of the art world, I don't know what context is specifically that they brought it up, but to say they're talking about it like an institution, you know, inspired him to slide in DMs and just let me know that was a huge confirmation. And then being a finalist at that VR only hackathon at the Keck School of Medicine around a curated group of 300 of the world's top medical professionals. Sure. I was like, okay, wow. You know, and then having investors say, if you want to develop this idea further, here's my card. I'd like to support you. Yeah. Just these very specific yeses from the universe, which is why my platform or my company, the brand, is called Yes Universe. The universe, through me saying yes to these very scary steps of like, okay, it's not distribution, it's not food, it's not beverage, you know, it's not food and beverage production. Like, there's no spoke on this wheel that has anything to do with food. And saying, okay, I'm starting over again.
Yeah.
And like, what does that look like? I'm really grown. And the folks who knew me before, my friends who knew me before, were like, you're crazy to do this.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and to them,
to be switching,
it's like,
lanes like this.
Right. And to them, it's so different than
what you're doing. Yeah, like, you were successful.
Right, right, right. They see you as a business owner before. But
specifically in food and beverage production.
Right, 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 right. Yeah. Well, and even now, and it's like, I mean, in the end, aren't we all in business? If anybody's making money or trying to make, everyone's trying to make money to pay their bills, right?
Sure.
Even curators at museums, right?
Yeah.
Like, even those with the PhD, at the end of the day, it's about. But like, that aside, like, you're in a different industry now where it's more, yes, of course, you want to make money and make a living, but it's more than just that with this, right?
Right.
You're making a community, and you're also like, exhibiting work that has messages with them and like cool messages that you want to share with the public, right? Which, but like for them, they don't get it. They're not understanding.
They're not understanding, and they don't get like even sort of like when I was transitioning again to being into my empowered warrior self. Again, art was my companion. Sure. So it's like being in love. I'm not going, now that my life is different.
Sure.
You know, and you didn't see me with this particular person.
Oh, yeah.
But we're, you know, this person's funny and they're great and they get me. And, you know, maybe they're not the person I would have dated in the past. But guess what? I'm a new person.
Yeah.
And I'm happier than I've ever been.
Sure.
Making less money.
Yeah.
Right? Making less money. And not, you know, initially having that professional expertise, not feeling like the expert in the room.
Sure.
And that's also part of this joy. It's what I love. And so I love the fact that I'm constantly learning new things. And not to say that wasn't the case with food and beverage, but, you know, when you're manufacturing a product or doing distribution, those channels are set up and they really don't change very much.
Right.
You know, it's just a staple and, and that's what it is. And it works. And there's not a lot of creativity within that.
Sure.
But in this lane, I feel like I have to constantly be, especially with technology, I feel like not only do I have to be, but it's part of the overall, for myself, the way I experience this lane, it's a part of how I am in relationship to the artists, the work, the networks of folks in the art world itself.
Sure.
And I like the way I like my relationship to it right now, and I like the terms. Because they're mine.
So what was the show that you ended up doing? What was the title of the show you ended up doing over at MOAD?
Yeah, so at MOAD, that was a beautiful relationship, collaboration. I specifically worked with Mark, Emily, and James over there. The show is called Digitalia. You can still read about it on the website. Digitalia, Art and the Economy of Ideas. I feel like we are in and moving further into the age of imagination or like the imagination economy. And so what's so great about now is that you sort of like have to be a multi-hyphenate and it's encouraged. Artists typically have one way or a couple of ways in which they're making money, you know, especially if you're a painter, right? You make the one painting and it sells. Maybe you do a print or a couple, you know, like, but you have very few ways that you can monetize from the one thing.
Sure.
I feel like now with digital art, you have a myriad of ways that you can monetize from the one thing. And the one thing now becomes seven things.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that we're in the time now where artists, like this idea of being a starving artist and the culture supporting the most creative people who share their gifts, who inspire us, who share of themselves, like fragments of their soul in the form of their work. Culturally, the fact that we support them starving is crazy to me. It's unconscionable. And so I think I'm also attracted to digital art because of the many opportunities that it allows artists. I want to be a part of a time, of a world, of a consciousness that says, these people are very creative. They give us everything. They keep us inspired, and they help us to envision our worlds, you know, ahead. They help us they're the lamp on this path. And so at least one, right? One of the luminaries, groups of luminaries, we need to do everything possible to support them, like instructors, teachers, professors. So that's what I personally want. And I know there are artists out there that are making ridiculous money, but it's such a small fragment percentage of society that I feel like in the digital space now we have the opportunity to invite so many more people to economic prosperity.
Right. Well, and on top of the fact that like you started out on, like you're not coming out of a specific gallery, like you are coming, you're on the internet, like you're on a social media platform that is open, literally open to everybody.
That's
you don't
right.
have to be in New York City to go to that row of galleries they have in New York City. You don't have to be, you know, specifically here in San Francisco to the specific row of galleries.
I can be anywhere.
You can be anywhere.
Yeah. And so I love Instagram. I love the community that I've made there. My initial show, I hadn't met any of these artists.
Yeah.
I met them all on Instagram. Yeah. I arranged the show through Instagram, through DMs, and then later got their email addresses on WhatsApp or whatever else, but literally sometimes sending files through WhatsApp.
Sure, yeah.
You know? So I like artist Tony Goom, who's fantastic. I met her in New York recently and was just like, man, this is the first time we're actually meeting. But our relationship before, the basis of it, was through Instagram.
Sure, yeah.
And so finally then being able to take that relationship from DMs to, hey, let's grab lunch.
Yeah.
We're both in New York at the same time. Wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, wonderful. And I love that. I really love that. There's another artist whom I was finally able to meet and do a studio visit with. He's brilliant. His name is Kajal. He's next door to Derek Adams' studio. And, you know, just like all of these artists together in one place and just all of us colliding and being able to meet up. And, you know, I think part of that is facilitated through the internet. Again, part of it is facilitated through shows and then just through social groups. But I love that. And I love that it's, for me personally, tied to technology.
Sure.
And so once I figured out that I could be a full-time caregiver as well as monetize my Instagram, I decided that this was it. This is what I want to do with my life. I'll learn what I need to learn, but I'm not going to... I'll learn what I need to learn to be successful, but I'm not going to second-guess myself or decide that I don't have enough experience to show up and be in rooms with folks.
Sure.
Before, I would think, oh, I'm not qualified to do this. I'm not qualified to be here. I'm not qualified to... I would discount myself all the time in my experience and my abilities. And I think some of that is socially engineered, you know, as a woman.
Sure. I think about back in the day, you didn't have to have a PhD to be a curator.
Right.
You didn't even need to have a master's to be a curator.
Right.
You just needed to be someone who loved the work, knew a lot about the
could
work.
Talk about it.
Right. Was in the scene, was friends with the people who you understood who was coming, who was not up and coming. And that was it.
Right.
Over the years and the decades, it became, as it grew and grew, it became more like systemized and like where you had to go to school, you had to have these credentials.
Right.
But I think the forefathers of those and foremothers of those curators, they weren't as educated as they are today.
Right.
Like in terms of degrees.
Well,
and whatever,
I would even
right?
say they didn't have to go through as many hoops.
Sure. And, well, and college was cheaper back then, like in the 30s and 40s, and it was easier to apply to a PhD program than it is today back then.
Well, and if you were white too. So
well,
me being a black female who, you know, who hasn't gone through all of the academic steps, checked all those boxes to be here and to be doing shows at like a museum.
Right.
As my first show too, with people I've never met and only learned about them and their work through the internet.
Sure.
And then, you know, communicating through DMs, what?
Well, you know? Thing I was going to get to was that you take that where painting a sculpture obviously is like an institutionalized, like it's been around for so long, for hundreds of years, right? By 2019, it's like, you want to be a curator? Go to grad school. Do all these things. You got to study this specific thing, blah, blah, blah. What you're in is like where I think 500 years ago painting and sculpture was, where 100 years ago like was works on paper and like where
photography,
for where photography was at, but like where you're at right now is like, you know, of course like the person who's like starting out this new medium basically of art, because of the rise in technology we had in the last like two decades, like is not your traditional like what we consider a scholar.
Because, well, I mean, there are though. No, there, but, I mean, well, there not, are. But, it's just that's not the path I chose. That's not.
Well, I don't think it's as common.
Yeah.
Like this is not a popular medium yet, like where people study. I mean, people dive into it, but in terms of the community and the world, because I saw the art show, I saw Digitalia, and I saw, which we'll talk about in a second, the one you did over at
A360.
Yeah, and it's. That is that stuff and the way you curated it and how you met the people, that is not the norm.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that's bad. I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just speaks to where you're at in the history of what is going to be the art history of the digital art world is that, like, you know, basically what I'm saying is, like, fuck all the people who ever wanted, like, well, she's not really an academic, you know, because the thing...
Because there are those people.
There are those people, yeah. And I assume there are. But, like, the thing is that you are at the ground level of, like, this still very young art medium.
And I think, especially in the way that I want to do it...
Yeah.
At Yes Universe, the whole, you know, idea of Yes Universe is to bring people together around art and technology.
Sure.
You know? Yeah, for me, the Yes Universe is where art and technology bring people together, period. That's why we exist. And so the only way to do that, that I saw, is to become a curator. Take what I was doing online and say, okay, I actually want to meet these people beyond DMs and you know, like video chat, like FaceTime. I want to meet these people.
Yeah.
And I want others to see their work. I want to share their work now in real life. And so I'm so thankful to the opportunity that I had at the MOAD.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thankful to the folks and the circumstances and just everything that led me to that space. You know, including Japan, including my grandmother, like all of it,
right?
All of it. And so New York as well, all of it. And even the second show. So the show that I have now.
Yeah, let's get that because, oh man, I have so many things because the whole, that was a day that I won't forget. Yeah.
So that this is what I mean.
Yeah.
So we're going to dive into it, but ahead of time, let me say this is the kind of like magic that what I'm telling you, these are the things that are happening to me, which make me believe like I have a lane. Mm-hmm. This is, where else is this just kind of like happening to someone like me?
Right.
Right?
Right.
So yeah, the show that's up right now, it comes down on May 17th, so go and see it. It's called Reengineering Humanity. And reengineering humanity is essentially about the social programming that we all experience on a daily basis that shapes our opinions, shapes how we see the world, and ultimately shapes who we become. And it's surveying, you know, the larger, more serious issues and asking us, through art, are we able to see these issues in a different way?
Sure.
And so you're able to sit with the works in the gallery for a little time. You can record them on their phone, on your phone. It's an augmented reality.
Sure.
And it's just, I want people to, I want people to think, yes, deeply, critically, but I also want them to feel.
Sure.
I want them to feel. And I want them to feel in a place where they might not fully understand the works. And so they're forced to deal with an alternate consciousness to relate, to try to relate to the work.
Yeah, yeah.
They can't rely on the same mind that they use day in and day out, right? They have to tap into something else, or they're encouraged to tap into something else, a different part of their mind.
How did you get to be how did you get to have the show in that space? Was it they reached out to you because of Digitalia and other things that you were doing?
Yeah, essentially. So Sonia Maria, who's a wonderful person, introduced me to Agnes, who's the curator at, she's a curator co-director at A36M, which is at 836 Montgomery Street in the city. And we've, you know, just had lunch, gotten together, had a few conversations. They saw the show. They really loved it. 836M is a nonprofit gallery, too, so their whole mission is to support artists, especially the local community, and they've been fantastic, allowing me to experiment. I'm in a residency with them, and it's one that I was able to design, and they were open to that, and I think that's really great. So that's allowed me to have various experiences that I probably wouldn't have. And it's allowed me to take risks that aren't necessarily available to me on the institutional level.
Yeah.
Like maybe at a MOAD, you know, or a MoMA, right?
Yeah.
That's been interesting too, the way institutions work versus the way galleries work. And so this is my IRL, this is my second year. So I had my first show March 26th to August 25th in 2018, and that was at the MOAD, and then, you know, 2019, my second and third show are at 836M, and they basically will be up for March, again, March 26th. That must be my lucky day. March 26th to September 13th. And so the second show, which is called Applied Imagination, it's all AI. So it's AI, Applied Imagination, instead of Artificial Intelligence.
Sure.
And that show is June 3rd to September 13th at 836 Montgomery.
Well, one thing I wanted to point out about this show that I thought was really cool was when first we went earlier a couple of weeks ago on a tour, and you know, you're showing me all the different pieces. You're showing me how they work. You're showing me the interaction. Like, a couple of them require an iPad, an app that's on an iPad, and point it to it, and the work activates, it gets activated by this iPad and like does all these cool things. And you definitely have to like really be in the space.
You have to be present.
Right. You can't, exactly. I can't even describe it, but you have to be present.
Yeah.
But the most amazing thing that you told me at the end, which was like at the end of the night, was like, you were telling me, oh, by the way, these are like all the first time that all these artists have physically created this work, like right. most of them at least, but like yeah. where this, the work that was in physical form was really, it was on Instagram, was on the internet, and it was digitally shown. You had to see it on either your computer screen, your phone, yeah. your phone screen, whatever. But you asked them to see if they could basically replicate it, but in sculptural 3D form
yeah.
for the show.
Yeah.
And I would have, if you never told me that, I would have known. I never would have known that.
Yeah.
Right. Because you think about, and again, this could be like the biases of somebody coming from a traditional art world, but like, you know, over time you can tell like who's a good artist, and just because like the perfection of the craft, right? Mm-hmm. Like if something looks janky versus something that doesn't look janky, right?
Right.
And, you know, I was like looking around and I really didn't, you know, like there were maybe a little hints, but like I overlooked them because like the piece was so cool.
Right.
And then when he told me like, no, these are people I met on Instagram, and I asked them,
and they're professionals. I mean,
right.
they've gone to art school. One of them
right.
is an art, you know, professor. One of them, so Mark was in the show. So these
right.
are all very professional
right.
people. But the work itself lived on Instagram,
And
never had a physical,
right?
You know, never was a physical
right.
object.
Which and then how successful it translated to
right.
a physical
yeah.
gallery,
and
space.
How beautiful it all looked
sure.
together.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I even had the fortune of watching you give a prop tour to Steve Kerr.
I know.
And his wife, who happened to be walking by.
Yeah.
And his wife was intrigued, and she
yeah.
walked in, and,
yeah.
and she like she interacted with it, and so even to see someone other than myself,
right.
like who's like not from a traditional art background, interact with it, and was just as amazed as I was about the how
yeah.
it was set up,
and the fact that they got it too.
They fully
got it, and
yeah.
it's the and you know the issues that I, you know, the survey of issues. They were like, yes, these are the things we need to be talking about. It's so wonderful to see this represented through art.
Right.
Boom. Again, another right. confirmation, another yes from the universe. And not just them saying it.
Sure.
It certainly makes it, you know, a highlight in my mind, or notable, that it's like Steve Kerr and his wife, you know, on my birthday at
on
that.
Your birthday.
Just like, what? This is and the fact that you and I think a day before that, decided, okay, you know, I need to see, we were traveling, right?
Right,
so
right.
we were like going to be two ships in the night, and decided
right.
to sort of like, well, then let's just meet this day.
Sure.
And so that serendipity,
yeah.
this is what I'm not going to say, again, adding drama, this is what I live for. But, you know, this is
yeah.
the magic of life.
Yeah.
These are the things that for me, and this, Steve Kerr aside, this could happen with like a 5-year-old,
right.
you know, I love those connections.
Yeah.
I love to be with people when they're fully present, and
yeah.
I'm fully present, and that magic happening, that thing, that seed that's planted that you can see that sprouts.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Or confirmation through something
right.
that, for me, confirmation through this lane that I'm carving for myself. I want to be the best curator of the 21st century, hands down. And not the only best, but one of the best.
Sure.
And best doesn't look like, oh, you've got all the press, you got this. Best looks like, I remember when I went to that exhibition, I remember what I felt. I remember feeling changed when I left. That, for me, is my definition of best.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that, even being with you there and seeing how you thought about things differently, hearing your personal background and how it ironically connected with the artwork
oh, yeah,
and the exhibition.
Totally.
And
yeah.
how, you know, you even said, this is so timely.
Yeah.
And it was personal for you,
yeah.
even though before, you know, a few weeks ago, you had no idea
no.
that was even happening. You
right.
had no idea who I was. But
right.
now, through the magic of the universe, we have a shared connection and memory and event that happened together. And in some small way, we're different
yeah.
because of that shared experience. I love that.
Yeah.
And I feel like no other medium right now in this age of imagination, in the imagination economy, there's been no better time to apply our imagination, to dare, to go out on the limb, to shake it up and do things a little differently, to take a different route home. And that allowance for the all
yeah.
with the intention of it being the best ever
sure.
for me,
yeah,
this is bringing me the magic. This is bringing me opportunity. As I said, the, you know, opportunity to have both experiences of my first show being in the institution and then my second and third show being at a gallery with an, you know, international vibes. Like, these are French philanthropists.
Yeah.
Their gallery is in their family office.
Right, right, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
Like, what? I've never even heard of that, but yeah, that is fantastic. What if, you know, what if hedge funds had galleries in their building, and it was a part of a nonprofit initiative that specifically, or just not hedge funds, like all these, like, I was talking with an artist who's in the current show. Her name is Marjan Mogadam. She was saying the, you know, Google and Oracle and all these large companies need to be the Medicis of our time.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be the, they are the new Medicis. They need to accept that responsibility.
That is one of the biggest problems is that tech, oh, and everyone says it all the time, but like the tech world for some reason isn't as invested in the art world as it should be for as much money that they make.
Right.
It's very interesting that that happens.
I think they are, but not in the way that people expect. And I think they are maybe privately.
Yeah, so, but like not, yeah. Well, not in the traditional way in that, like, you know, like you mentioned, like the Medicis, where they were publicly buying stuff and like showing it.
Exactly.
But, you know, a lot of their stuff, you know, like Facebook does this Facebook mural program, which is great, but like you have to go in the building to see it, but you're not, everyone's allowed in the building. You have to work in the building.
Right.
So it's like, how are you seeing it?
Walled garden.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's like weird because it's like for a company that's based off of a social media, like where your all your business is out there.
Trust me, it drives me nuts too.
You know? But you know, like, but you're right. I mean, I've heard it at various institutions I've worked at where like their biggest thing is they're still trying to get that tech money and they still can't get it. It's still coming from traditional, still coming from that and not like the new wave of like wealth that's
not
in this.
The Googles, the 23andMe's, the Dropbox.
Right.
And so, you know, I think about this a lot. So speaking of tech companies, folks from Magic Leap were at the opening, and I think, and we're going to work together, and that's fantastic. I think it's also about having people show up and decide to risk collaboration, and that's what the MOAD risked, and that risk was met with reward.
Yeah.
Right? Because even the way they're doing their exhibitions now, I'm not saying like, you know, I'm responsible for that, or Digitalia is responsible. Right. I would never take that. But what I'm saying that by that is the collaboration, the partnership, the willingness to do something a little different, to take a risk.
Sure.
For both of us, it was a win-win. And,
sure.
And I feel like that's what...
Well, totally.
That's
because,
what we need.
Yeah, because they took the risk in going... with a non-traditional artist and non-traditional curator.
Yeah, I'm from the culture.
Right.
You know, I'm from the culture.
Right.
I'm from the internet culture.
Right.
You know.
Which a lot of museums kind of veer, still kind of shy away from.
Yeah.
Like, they're not, they dip their toe in, but they never go all in.
That's right.
And then even on your end, where your beginnings are never in an institution, they were on a social media platform, like, the both of you decided to go in on this, like, crossover,
that's
basically.
That's what I'm saying. So the institution and the culture have to come together.
For sure.
And that's what MOAD did so well. And they said, okay, these, you know, they weren't like, oh, just, like, open the floodgates. They said, these are the constraints.
Yeah.
And if you can build something within these constraints, then we'd love to partner.
Yeah.
And I said, right on, let's do it.
Yeah.
And then also with the gallery. They're like, we are, you know, a VC... funded in like space. We are a family office. We have the gallery in front as a nonprofit to support the local ecosystem, but we do have constraints. And so I'm a total, you know, free spirit. And at first I'm like, constraints? Oh God. You guys just we're artists, we can't have constraints. We, you know. And then I thought, well, fantastic.
Yeah.
Me creating in constraints is actually what led me here.
Yeah.
And so it forces a person, at least let me speak for the guy, it forced me and still forces me to be really creative. And now I'm loving that. I'm loving those constraints and I'm loving the results of having that. And I think that if folks want to be true partners, they respect each other's constraints and say, This is what I need to make this work. And then if you really want to be in partnership with them, you say, okay, this is what I need to make this work. And you look at those needs together and you create something beautiful out of it. And it's a win-win.
Yeah.
And it's a win-win-win if the public also feels fed or uplifted or inspired or transformed as a result of contact with that show or those works.
Right.
You know, and so far this is what's happened. And it's... I feel great about it. This is what I live for. Really, this is what I live for, and this is a part of the legacy that I leave. I will definitely still have a grocery store. I will go back to grocery retail. Because again, grocery stores, little bodegas that have very fine food provide that social atmosphere as well. So, you know, a space where art and technology bring people together, but then also, again, a space where food and art and that vibe brings people together. I just love having people together. Yeah, so I would say on this journey that I've had so far with art and technology, the things that I've learned probably aren't the things you thought I would not just learn, but in transforming what the jewels that I've been able to put in my crown haven't necessarily been, you know, maybe what people think, you know, the art I've sold or who's collected it or what celebrity I'm chatting to or what show I'm doing next. You know, whatever is important to people in this like art world, it's for me being the people I've been able to connect with, the love languages I've been able to learn, the artists I've been able to meet and champion, the things I've learned from them, really just the people. Yeah, the people, and then of course the cool art I get to see, and then that compassion. Just those things have been the most transformational and the most amazing for me. So yeah, that's my path. Sorry.
But thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thank
you
for having me.
Talking to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you represent a whole different, like, different part of the community of art, like, overall, the umbrella of the art world that I think, you know, I was first a little bit introduced to it by Mark when I interviewed Mark for this podcast, and then now here's just more of it from you. So it's been really great to, like, talk to you, and I'm excited to, like, share this podcast. But check out the show. It ends at the end of this week, but there's still phase two.
There's phase two that opens June 3rd. And if you want to be on the list for that, just DM 836M _art on Instagram or me at yesuniverse.art on Instagram. You can still see the show that's up now at 836 Montgomery, and the show will be up until the 17th.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's it for today, everyone. Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Lady Phoenix for coming onto the podcast. To learn more about reengineering humanity at 836M Gallery, visit 836M.org. The show ends this weekend on May 17th, so check it out before it transitions to phase two. You can learn more about Yes Universe by visiting www.yesuniverse.art, or you can check it out on Instagram at yesuniverse.art. You can also follow Lady Phoenix at YesLadyPhoenix. And if you like what you heard today, please leave a rating and a comment on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. All right, till next time, everyone.